Okay, testing, testing. Yes. So I am opening a special meeting of the Town of Canton, Canton Center Historic District. Today is Thursday, July 17th, 2025, and it is 7 p.m. Our roll call commissioners here are Sue Lampros. We have two alternates here, Lori McKenna and Linda Kessler. And I am the chair, Gina McGinnis. And I am going to open up this special meeting. I'm just going to preface this with our business today is to review a preview. And this is not something, so in other words, today is not a meeting for approval or to get a certificate of appropriateness or for a vote. It's simply to get information from Mr. Lansford Perry and to who has actually, as a courtesy, we have scheduled this meeting on a date when the Planning and Zoning is not meeting. So, all right, I'm going to open this up to a public hearing, and Mr. Perry, you're on.
Yeah, I just wanted to read section 7159B, which is the statute. I'll just read it into the record just so you have it. It's
okay.
In the statutes, it's pre-application review of use of property, and it says, notwithstanding any other provisions of the general statutes, prior to the submission of an application for use of property under Chapters 124, 126, 440, and 541, or any other provisions of the general statutes authorizing an authority, commission, department, or agency of a municipality to issue a permit or approval for use of such property, such authority, commission, department, or agency, or authorized agent thereof, may separately, jointly, or in any combination conduct a pre-application review of a proposed project with the applicant at the applicant's request. Such pre-application review and any results or information obtained from it may not be appealed under any provision of the general statutes and shall not be binding on the applicant or any authority, commission, department, agency, or other official having jurisdiction to review the proposed project. So in other words, one can talk freely, and if you say you're going to do something, you don't have to do it. So if you say you're going to attend the Canton Center Historic District meeting, you have a license to not attend, even though you said you would.
Could I just ask you for the number of that statute?
It's on the application form.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And the text is there. I simply read it because it seemed important that it be in the record and that you understand, if you hadn't read the statute, that it's basically something to try to encourage people to communicate freely. And my goal in this is simply to try to make the Canton Center Historic District Commission function better for our town and to try to tell you things that we might think we want to do in here, what you think about it. I have 15 properties. Well, actually, I got a lot more maybe, but 15 by my count. But I think you guys count buildings, so maybe I got more. But most of them are somewhat important. One thing that has troubled me in the history of the Canton Center Historic District is when, you know, Vicki Urell was chairman for a while, and she lived in her dad's house. Dud Snow built the house in 46 and put on an aluminum storm door with a S for snow on it. And it was falling apart, and she appealed for help because she thought her husband was in dire need, and she was, and somebody said, well, the first thing you need is a good storm door to keep the weather out. So they gave her a storm door. Now, this is on a 1946 house that was hardly of any significance whatsoever historically, but it fell under it, and she had been a former chairman and was secretary or scrivener for the meetings. And if you check the minutes, there was a lot of flack about the fact that she had changed the door on the house without asking permission to do so. And I think I bought her house shortly thereafter. They were in foreclosure, and I let them live there for quite a while free. But it pointed out to me that things that are important should be very carefully looked at and regulated, and things that aren't important should probably be somehow not regulated. Now, the Historic District Commission, in a case like that, I think would agree immediately that this is not, and I can't speak for the commission, but I can say based upon my mommy having been on it, and Beaver Merriam and all these people I know, and Sam Humphrey, they would have said, listen, that place doesn't have any significance. You can put a green door or a red door, because we can't cover color. And whether it has the stylized S from 1946 that you'd have to go on eBay to find really doesn't matter. In zoning, we talk about making things by right or making them by special exception, and much of the difficulty with affordable housing is that you make people come in with a big presentation when really what they're doing is kind of automatically approved. And it has seemed to me that if you were to, as a commission, go down and identify the critical houses, which on Barbertown Road might be the Stone House. Well, what's your house? The Elijah Barber House, the house above it, which you could call by nine different names. Mrs. Carson is, or Ms. Carson is trying to sell it now. And then you had what was Clarence Snow's house at one time, but now it's got Kravitz's in it. That's been bastardized. And those sorts of houses are important. Things like Cherry Brook School in its current form, or its playground, which was substantially altered, and perhaps it's more than 1,000 feet from a road, I don't know. Are unimportant, and my feeling is that there is a sense that on commissions often that we don't want to cede any power to anyone, but at the same time we should recognize when the decision is critical, we should make that decision with full deliberation and full information. And when it's a completely unimportant thing. Now, I brought a picture of that house down past the creamery, which if it were to alter in any way is completely unimportant. It's a newly built house that I should have bought the land. It was $86,000 and I didn't buy it.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Russ
yeah.
Richardson bought it.
Oh,
but
yeah,
you approved this house.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the guy ran for first selectman and he's probably beloved. But for him to come in and go, you know, I want to change the coping on the side of the door there a little bit. Is that okay from an historic perspective? You go, why? Why does he have to come in? Or the gray house at 7 West Mountain that Hector Prudhomme built that I own, which has a deck and all glass, and it's kind of a piece of junk. It has an atrium and it's hard to heat and it probably ought to get flattened, but it is the sort of house that there is no legitimate reason to intervene in its external architectural features from the perspective of the Historic District Commission. It would be, I think, the conclusion of competent architects and historians. So that's one thing. I think that if you wanted to do the world a favor and cut your load, you could find the ones that matter, like 4 West Mountain, which I've been going through. The guys hammered the windows out. He took them out, the 16s, over 16s or whatever. He framed up and he's got some dinky little windows. And I have a picture of
that. I just went there today.
I have the picture for you. I took this afternoon and I sent it to you yesterday and said, get after that guy because we don't want him to waste his money.
So I did
and
go there.
And if he
today.
Rips the damn thing apart, he's wasting his money. Because if you guys have any integrity, you're not going to let him take the Ephraim Mills' house and convert the damn thing to casement windows.
He's not. I went there today.
And what happened?
They're replacing the siding with the exact, with cedar siding. He is going to put a 6x6 window, cedar window.
It's not the same size.
It's not the same size because he's
He has no right to do that.
I
It's your commission. You can make the decision.
I understand.
And I think you're going to be sweet because you want to be.
No. I just want
but
you to know that.
But if that house doesn't matter, which your book here, I have Ruthie Humphrey's
You don't think that this is within the district?
It absolutely
is.
Yeah,
saying it is.
Oh, it is, yes.
That is
I agree.
Arguably the most important home in the district.
But he
if
hasn't
you read
put anything
about
in front
it.
Of us.
No. I went and I gave him an application today. So it's like he has to do that. Yeah. So
I haven't been by there lately, but I just saw he took some trees out.
Yes.
But I didn't see anything done to the exterior.
No,
so
they just ripped
done?
Out the siding on that side, and they are replacing the window with a shorter window.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they have a countertop going behind there. And,
change the counter, not the window, would be what
the
people who honored this idea would do. But it's fine with me. I'm practical. I don't care, really. But it is, according to your booklet somewhere, it says...
Yeah, it's right here.
Many early plans of the new church were made here. In his later years, Ephraim Mills became an early planner of the Congregational Church. His son Simeon was our first postmaster. In early times, parishioners would warm themselves in the house on Sundays. This is quoting from...
It is a very significant house, I agree.
I think it's arguably,
it's
with
home.
The
yes.
stone house,
yes.
the most significant. Yes. I didn't buy it because
I showed
didn't
it five
want to
times when it was
it.
On the market.
Yeah.
What's that?
I showed it. I'm a real estate agent,
yeah.
so I showed it five times when it was on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost was heartbreaking, the condition inside.
They offered to mm-hmm. give it to me if
was,
I would take
mm-hmm.
Mrs. Solovic with it. I'm not kidding. That was a pretty awful situation.
Oh, wow.
And Mrs. Solovic is an independent woman, and I'm not mm-hmm. going to tell her what to do. But anyway, that house should be watched like a hawk.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
If you care about the Canton Center Historic District. The house that you ultimately gave me a permit to knock down, I think, at that Vicki Urell was in, was a completely undistinguished, of no historical importance, except obviously it's lovable. Dud Snow built it. The family was raised there. It was an important thing from their angle, but it was in a horrible, deteriorating condition due to lack of money, and it needed to come down. Ditto for a couple of others that I knocked down. So I guess the first thing was you need to decide what your rationale is, because for a regulation to be constitutional, and you'll never get challenged on it, you're always going to win probably, but honorably, you should say what matters. If you say the external architectural surfaces of the following historical home shall not be changed, absent some, you know, if there's a fire code thing and they just have to be or something like that, you could at least let this guy know. If he went down with his finger, he'd see you had to give him a plaque to put there. This is one of the most important houses in the district, or this is a class one house versus a whatever if you were in England, you know, or Scotland or something. So that's a thought, and it would save people from coming in here if you just deaccessioned them out of the district. You've got a lot of houses that are of no importance, or at least some, the Dud Snow types houses. Edgerton's current house, which came in on the back of a truck and got lifted by a crane. They could do whatever they wanted with it, and I don't think it's going to hurt. Another thing that affects me is I was looking at this and I was thinking, I studied a little bit in the historic district business and certainly in rehabilitating historical mill buildings and such. And there are two schools of thought. One of them is that if it's in our district, it must look like our district. We want an homage to the Ephraim Mills house or the Deacon whatever house.
Yeah.
Another one says, look, we don't want people to be fraudulently deceived. If they come in this district, we'd almost like them to not build something that could be mistaken for an historic house unless it has entire fidelity, which is expensive, and they build it in the exact location of a known historic house. Why are we troubling them over the shape of it? And I note in the historic district subject matter jurisdiction stated in the statute, it says that it does not apply to any property owned by a institution of higher education. Sam Humphrey and I had talks about this. We were going to start the Samuel Humphrey Institute of Technology, which had SHIT, and then the Perry Institute for Libidinous Education, so it would be called what you can spell out, or it was going to be farmers utilizing critical knowledge on farm fields.
Uh-huh.
And we would have our institution of higher education, and we could hire someone to create it. We'd give all our properties to it, and we'd be not subject, and we could do whatever we wanted. But I don't really think that's something we would ever do. But it shows that in the case of an institution like Dartmouth, where I went, or Yale, they have these beautiful historic buildings, and then some idiot gives them $500 million, and they build I.M. Pei's latest creation, or the guy with all the bent-up sheet metal.
Gary. Yep.
You know the guy.
Michael Gary. Yep.
And they pound it, and they put it in right next to the historic church or something, and it is awful. I don't think anyone would want to really have that if they had good taste, but the real question is, on new build, when it is not affecting an existing historic building of significance, why do we bother people about it much? You look at the Canton Center Church, and they tore down the parish house when I was a kid. Then they built it on, and then they built it on and wiped out the parking and kind of made life miserable for the thing there. And I guess that it was passed at a meeting held in the church. Mm-hmm. I don't think you guys were probably on the commission then. But Timmy Legette or somebody,
yeah,
or Sam or Beaver pounded the gavel and, yeah, said, we want to extend the building behind me a little bit farther out, and we hereby approve it. Mr. Case has aluminum siding on his house, except for the porch. I think it had a lot of kinks, and it would have been hard to aluminum side, or maybe they just left the wood because the porch had been redone more recently. But if you go and scratch that place, it's aluminum siding. I tore down the dearly beloved blacksmith shop after waiting for a permit for 9 months or something. Leslie used to live there. When I tore it down, I took a cheerful picture of the aluminum and vinyl siding that it had on it getting done up. There was a reason to that. If I build another house on that location, one would think that I presumably could use aluminum or vinyl siding because it was already there. I don't know what the law is. If it was zoning, I would have any pre-existing use and I'd be allowed to duplicate it. But it is an interesting thing. So you said you lived on a farm, and you own a farm my brother uses, and you lived on a farm. One thing I can tell you is there's now 84 dairy farms in Connecticut. I'm the last secretary of the Canton Creamery Association, and Arthur Sweeten III was the president when I was pulled up at a trifling young age, and we ended up getting it to be over and selling the building, and they had 52 farms contributing milk there, and it got down after Harry Humphrey went out at 225 Cherry Brook Road. He went out in 46 or 47, went to work for my old man driving his car around delivering parts and working as a milk inspector and a variety of other things. But the farming business is one that is not profitable in any way. It's something we do because we love it. And I think that what got Scotty, you know, my brother Robert.
Hey.
Hey, finally showed up. Pardon me, I interrupted.
Because it's usually
usually at 7:30, but today's meeting was at 7.
Hi.
Hi. How are you, Ken?
Was it at 7?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I tried to call you, but I couldn't find
it. I thought it was 7:30. Special.
Yeah.
That's our normal time. Yeah. So usually
it's sorry.
Yeah.
Did you read the application where it talked about a 7, what is it, 7159B or something?
I have 159B.
I'm going to read it.
Yeah. Where we can speak freely without having to worry about somebody jamming it down our nose at a future date.
It's non-binding. So, yeah.
And I've dominated the meeting.
So the dairy farms are getting, they're not that many left, right?
Right.
There's 84.
Fewer and fewer. Mm. There was a big article in the paper the other day about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's always somebody who has 5,000 cows and manure by the million cubic yard load in eastern Connecticut. I could summarize what I said quickly when you're ready, Ken. I'll tell you what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's fine.
It's okay. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Current time, 7:28, so he's right on time.
I know, yeah.
For the wrong
exactly.
time.
Gosh, yeah, that's too bad. Okay, do you want to...
I spent the first 28 minutes of the meeting, or maybe it started a little late, talking about the fact that a number of the buildings in the historic district have great historical significance and should be watched like a hawk. And then there are modern buildings that, such as this one below the creamery, if they changed it in any way, it's absolutely immaterial to the integrity of the district, I think. Though that's a determination you guys make. I also presented a photograph I took at 2 o'clock today of the Ephraim Mills House having its symmetric windows knocked out. The guy tore out the windows because he wants to put a counter there, and so he just did it. And
whose house is this?
That's
Four
West
Mountain.
Barbara Solovic now, whoever owns its house.
Mm-hmm. It sold like four or five months ago.
Yeah.
Is that the house that's off of...
It's just behind
the sycamore tree.
Yeah.
Right,
right.
Right
to the left.
It's on the left.
It's right there. So.
It's
yellow,
right?
Huh?
It's yellow.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ephraim Mills House, and I was saying about how that's one of the more significant houses, like the Stone House, or like your house, or like Leslie's house. Or, what is it? The Elijah Barber House. And right. Then up the road. But or your house. There's a number of houses that are critical, perhaps your house. I'm not sure how that fits in. I guess that's critical. The ones that have been newly built are bastardized so badly that they have no historical significance. My encouragement would be to the extent possible deaccession them out of your museum, or generally make it known that they are less sensitive and more easily done. The goal of land use regulation is to try to ensure that we get a wonderful town while minimizing the cost and anxiety and commissioner's time. And if we have a house like this one down below the creamery, if that guy has to come in to change the nature of his windows, I really don't think it makes any difference. And that's my opinion. Obviously, you guys are the ultimate arbiters of it, but if you could get that guy the heck out of the district, and you could say, we don't want to trouble you, or, you know, you'd almost like, as I said, perhaps a class one or a class two house, or a class five, which is never looked at or something, was a thought that that might work. Then I spoke about new houses, and the fact that when you have an historic district that is trying to have integrity, there is always the question of, should you allow homages to the old houses that get to the point of being a fraudulently constructed old-looking house if it would confuse the visiting public who would look at it, or do you want to say new houses can be of whatever shape they choose to be because they are not of historic significance. They are, if they are super good, you know, a very, very fine replication, that would be perhaps the most welcome. But I don't think we could tell people that they have to do that. And the historic district has accepted some pretty awful houses. They accepted Edgerton's house on the back of a truck that came in and then had another piece of it come in on the truck and got bigger.
Was there a commission at that time? I don't remember.
I don't know.
I don't know. It probably was my mom and Sam Humphrey and Beaver and whoever. They were trying to be accommodating. The house had burned down. And Howdy had built that little thing that he needed to live in. It was awful. I helped clean the old house foundation out. It had coal in it. Had a little mink stole his wife had had. A choker, and they gave that to me for digging all the coal out several tons. It was the biggest ripoff ever. But anyway, the point being that these are decisions that if you made them, they would allow you to focus on the critical houses and be vigilant on those and be less concerned and less obstructive of people doing things that they want to do. In zoning, as I said during an earlier conversation, we speak about uses as of right and uses that require a special exception or a site plan approval, and generally, to the extent that an acceptable result will reliably come of staff approval of something, why bring it in front of the commission? That's basically the idea. So we, in an era where houses cost ever more due to the fact that those greedy architects, you're familiar with some architects, they're just terribly expensive. And
watch yourself there.
Surveyors. Everybody has to attend the meeting to present the plans, and the poor person trying to build the house spends more. So that was one issue. Then I thought I would, I started to talk about the farming business. Now, I had a meeting last Thursday with my brother Scott, his wife and son, and Ashley Deming and her partner, Christopher Lawler. Chris and Ashley are trying to run the farm and are doing a nice job, and they have their little farm stand, and Ashley is phenomenally creative and phenomenally energetic. She gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning, gets to bed at 7 at night, which my brother would say she's working short hours, but it's kind of amazing that she can do it, and she is enthusiastic and focused on it. She makes about 10% more than the minimum wage in the state of Connecticut is her pay.
She does a good social media presence.
She does
also
that, and I hope they're making some money off of the soap, which is artfully done.
Yeah.
But it is a labor of love.
Oh, yeah.
And it is something that I wonder, with them getting married shortly, how will she have kids and have a life? You know, when my brother did it with the farm, his wife did not, well, rarely worked on the day-to-day stuff. She would drive the tractors at harvest time and stuff, but mm-hmm. she kept house and did her thing and lived just upstairs in the barn there. But I have ultimate plenary authority over everything because I own it. And am I a wise person and a kindly person if I allow this to continue? My brother Scott, I favored with ownership in certain properties that would provide him some cash flow. So he has money like he had a business, independent of the farming business. And it is used almost entirely to subsidize the farm. Last year, and I don't know that it happens every year, but he lost $79,000. Now, I paid $150,000 in property taxes, not all of it on the farm. I paid about $37,000 in insurance on the farm. I paid between generous gifts to try to make it so these kids can live, something on the order of $50,000 or $60,000 more. And if you add it all up, you go, gosh, you ought to stop doing that. You could put that in the bank. I know some lady that knows how to manage money, and she'd have you a hell of a fortune in a short time. And another thing I did was I have bought 59 properties in Canton and 10 in New Hartford. I knocked out the ones that are industrial plants and that sort of thing. I didn't include my mother's gifts to us or my father's. But the cost of the farm, that's been since 1986, has been a little over $11 million I've paid for land. And I took the date that I bought the deed and I put it in a spreadsheet and I took the S&P 500 on that date. And then I got a thing where I can enter today's S&P 500. Now, I didn't account for property taxes for all the improvements I had to do, but on deed cost alone, if I'd given the money to Mass Mutual or someone, I'd have over $60 million just from those deeds that were exclusive of my businesses and anything my mother gave us, like that house and that basic farm, so that it has not been a hoarding that has been very profitable. We're talking about hoarders, and the fact is, as I look at it, am I going to continue down this path? Is this an ethical thing to do to the next generation if we're losing our shirt? And then I get thinking, who is enjoying this when it was your late husband, who we all loved, and Timmy Legette and his brothers, and Carl Dewey that we all worked for, who took off, and my brother, of course, who farmed it, Howdy Edgerton across the swamp, and his kids, and the Miri, my mother, took in over 50 kids who lived on our farm for over 6 months, just because they needed a place to go, including this one. There were a lot of people that we tried to help and that we thought we would kindly and lovingly create a place for. And I was stuck running the shop, and when my brother Robert was just starting the barn and the foundation had gone in, he got an MS diagnosis. And Scotty stepped in. It wasn't his choice. And I was given the yoke, and they cinched it up and said, pull, from age four, when, as I said, I was pulling the little lambs out of the back of the animals because I had little arms. But it has been a labor of love and of joy. But then, as I serve on the Planning and Zoning Commission, and I realize that prior to my father's death, I bought Breezy Hill. I'm the poor bastard who countersigned the note. I'm the one who earned the money for the Sunwind and Woodland and Braesland Farm. And then I had my father give the, and we gave that to the charitable trust that then gave it to the land trust. And a bunch of other land we gave to the land trust. It totals about 750 acres. Then the bulk of the land trust got at that time and prior to it was through the cajoling of me as former director and secretary of the land trust and my mom, who thought that saving the world by saving land was a wonderful idea. And we probably are responsible for well over 1,000 acres of the land trust. Noel Baker was a close friend. The Smith Christmas Tree Farm, my father showed Dr. Smith the farm. Drove him in the Jeep there and he bought it. The cabin up on Breezy Hill Road that they just tore out was the chairman of the board of Connecticut General and was a good friend to our family and had that and gave it to the land trust. And we've tried that and done it to such an extent, I don't really feel like giving everything to the town of Canton or the land trust particularly. And I'm questioning in my mind whether it is ethical to compel another generation to run a money-losing farm. My brother wanted to retire at 70, which was in 22. He was gonna. Now he gets up at 5 a.m. and goes to bed at 10 or 11 every night instead of staying up all night with the guys. But he's still working his arse off and looks tired. And is it ethical for me to continue to do that? It isn't something that we take lightly. I did all this with the clear wish to please those we loved, starting with my mommy and my father and siblings and people like Leslie here and people like you that enjoyed the valley and newcomers who do. And when we asked to tear down the Humphrey Farm barns, it was so we could pasture more over there because we had young stock that needs a certain amount of forage. And if you have that much, you can put them in there, and then if you don't, you can't. And the thought was the barns were falling apart. They were rotting long before I got there. Mary Ann Humphrey Burbank's husband may have roofed the barn, but it was rotted on the various structural members before that. And I looked at it and gave up on it. And I did put some money into them, but then I realized it was not going to work. And the barns now are slowly deteriorating, so I'll get a order from Rand Stanley to tear them down. Before I did anything, I got the asbestos removed and the certification they're clean. So if they do fall down, at least when you're walking your dog, you don't have to worry if you're going to get a horse noise in his chest or her chest. But I kind of felt like my mission and Scotty's and I think Beaver's and many of the people who supported the historic district was to have the story told and known, to have the lifestyle of my kids are the 12th generation, my grandkids are the 12th generation of Richard Case that was the first person to come into the town of Canton and farm, and when they wheel their little toes in the dirt, they're the 12th generation, which is kind of neat. And we wanted to try to continue a farm because we thought it was a noble thing to do in our value system. It wasn't about making money or being stupid. My brother Scott could do anything. He's exceedingly smart and expressive of graphic biological facts sometimes if you talk to them about the reproductive systems of various animals and every other thing and how you breed a cow artificially, etc. But he also is just wonderfully competent and he devoted his life to keeping this place that we all call Canton Center, Canton Center. And I have dumped money in. It wasn't much. It was a $250,000 a year for 40 years or something, with a little extra here and there. And somehow I was able to do it. I had credit from people who would sell. They would come to me. You know, the Humphreys came to me after. I just wanted to buy the island field, not the house, but then they wanted to sell the whole kit and caboodle. Ralph Johnson up on top of the hill, Tommy Cables, Hector Prudhomme's son, Hector P. Prudhomme, not Hector C., and Richard Prudhomme's son, after his parents died, wanted me to buy the top of the hill. The Simpsons up on Breezy Hill. Walt Simpson was there and died. And Charlie and I had been in school with his daughter Elizabeth. I arranged to buy their farm and then ultimately bought Elizabeth's house. Braisland Farm on top of the hill. Henry Bear was ill and I bought the gravel bank and a variety of other things. Toflon was dying and I bought the remnants of some of Connecticut sand and stone. So that we have been a repository for farms and have told everyone when we bought it, if we're going to pay a development prices, which is what you should expect, we can't warrant that we will never not farm it. But I guess my point regarding the Canton Center Historic District is that it seemed to me that culturally to have an active farm was a hell of a lot more important than whether you took a snapshot in 2040 and could see the barn falling in. I have a picture of one at 203 Cherry Brook Road that is nicely preserved that's falling in. I gotta find it, I got so many pictures, but that's the holding barn that's fallen in. You can see it. There's a close-up from the field.
Oh, yeah.
That barn is done.
Yeah,
if the building inspector was living up to his rules.
Yeah, it's probably a danger to.
Yeah, I don't think kids are going in there, but
right,
they
yeah.
do raise hell with you over that sometimes.
Yeah.
And I would think that if you were asked to give her a permit to knock it down, she kind of already has it knocked down.
Yeah.
One thing I cited in my lawsuit I never bothered to file because I decided I didn't think it was worthwhile because I'd just get sent back to talk to the same people. Because I would win, but what do I get? But I thought that the word, I don't know, I can't get my glasses or I can't see it, but I listed all the various buildings that had been demolished, a barn at 167 Cherry Brook Road, a silo at 225 Cherry Brook Road, a garage at 221. And if you go down it, everybody's barn got wiped out, but when I wanted to do it, suddenly it was the most important thing in the world, probably because Mary Ann Humphrey, who should have recused herself, came in. And
but could I address some of your points?
Sure.
Okay. So I, first of all, I just want to like have you really understand that I know for a fact that you have been a tremendous steward in this district of the land. I mean, all of your properties are wonderful examples of conservation, and I mean.
Except for the damn barn.
Except for the damn barn.
You're trying to make a point.
Okay, but I'll make that point later. I hear you loud and clear about the, you know, modern buildings versus significant historic buildings. To change the district boundaries, I think would be quite a large endeavor to have that happen. However, I do want you to understand that I totally agree with you as far as when, you know, someone has a, you know, if that modern house came to us for that.
I would think
there is within the my purview as chair to, without having a general meeting, to give approval. Which I've done.
Yeah.
That, which is what I wanted to like get across. Like when Cherry Brook General Store Do you remember how disgusting that one side of the building was? They replaced that siding, and they did not come before our commission.
I would think they should, but...
I went down there, and I said, what are you doing?
It's fine, but I want to respect the law, and the law says the commission should meet, but maybe it has a provision to allow it.
It does. It is right. I just wanted you to...
Certain parameters.
Yes, certain parameters. It says exempted work. The commission chairman is authorized to approve historic district landowners and/or building inspectors' requests for repairs identical to existing or original appearance without a certificate of appropriateness.
Yeah, that's clear.
Providing the repairs conform with commission guidelines, okay?
They can't do it in AZEC probably then, right?
In what?
AZEC, whatever it is, plastic.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, if it looked identical, maybe they could. You could approve it.
But so like, we've also had, you know, the farm that's down here on Cherry Brook. They wanted to put up a fence.
Yes.
And they were like, do we really have to come? They had already come before us twice.
Well, I'm delighted if you're...
And I was like, no, I will approve your fence, you know, like this is ridiculous. So I want you to know that the purpose of the commission is not to give people a hard time or to...
I think that one of the things that troubles me is that I see this sign on this house down by the thing and it says, no one is above the law. I think I saw that once on your front lawn. Maybe not. But I believe from a zoning perspective, we have an absolute duty to treat everyone equally and equitably. And I would encourage you to use your authority, which basically is to allow the repair in an identical manner as of right, basically.
Exactly.
Because I believe that comes from the statute.
Yes.
Putting up a new fence is a change. And I would have thought that from a legal perspective, it would be different unless it was an existing fence and there was no change. And, you know, if it was a split rail and you put up the same height split rail with the same number of rails, I think that probably is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wasn't in any way trying to impugn your lack of an intention to be helpful. And I think that we know that in the case of the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, they never have a damn meeting, it seems like, and never have a vote. Mm. Last night, across the way, our vice chairman started to say, motion, and I said, second, and she said, it's approved. I said, you got to back off. The commission has to vote.
They have to
even
vote.
Though we probably will agree.
I know, something.
We are not PURA. You can't make that and record the decision.
There was one other thing that I just wanted to add, just to prepare for this meeting, I went through and just like reviewed some of the significant homes that are in the district. And one of the things that stood out to me is that you'll notice that, like, in order for them to accommodate a larger family, a new kitchen, you know, like a lot of them put additions onto their homes.
We're talking pre-19, whenever the district 85, came in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pre-1985. What I'm saying is that the commit, in my, Len, please correct me if you all don't feel the same way, but my feeling is that we want to maintain a character, certainly, for the district. But I don't want to restrict people from modernizing, updating their homes. Yes, I think that these very significant historic homes, and that's part of what, when you buy one of these homes, that is an understanding that you're going to be, you know, held to these standards.
I don't know how this guy didn't know that he had an historic.
He said,
I
kind of can't talk about that today because it's a different thing. But
it was disclosed in the listing information.
Mm. Yeah,
just
so it is.
It is. I wasn't involved then.
And that's something that, you know, a person
right up front.
Right up front, they know that they are subject to that. So what I'm saying is that I also feel that the commission needs to be open to...
In other words, you don't want to be a total bunch of buttheads, which is noble.
Right.
The Center for Land Use Education down at UConn has a famous case they present where the historic district would not allow any change to the building whatsoever, and it made the sale fall through, and the building was deteriorating, but the new owner wanted to change, put an addition on, and the building was lost. The homeowner lost the sale, and it was an elderly person who ended up going to the rest home and Medicaid. So it was punishing, and they made the point that when you are enforcing your regulations, have some empathy and understanding, and it's wonderful that you've given evidence of that.
So I just, I definitely hear your points, and I 100%, I mean, we approved a brand new construction somewhat recently.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, yeah.
Where's that going?
It's at the very end of the district down on, actually, I think that house was just shy of our district.
It was just outside.
Just
outside.
We didn't
find that out until
we didn't
after.
Find it out.
Oh, the one down at the bottom of the hill there,
they
by
came,
the brook.
They came to us, but we found out after the fact that they were outside of the district. So, but just I wanted you to hear that because it's not something that...
I think I knew you were of extremely kindly goodwill and trying to do the right thing. And I guess the crowd at that prior meeting about the thing was hell-bent that this was the most important barns in the world. And in many respects, they are if they were your barns when you were a child.
I think that what was happening is that it was... We found out that it was those barn. That was the oldest remaining tobacco barn.
No, I can disprove that in a heartbeat. I brought that just in case.
I think the other reason.
There's the article. It was newly built in 1895, and I told Warren he was full of prunes and sent him the article, and it makes a nice story. See, you have to understand, Fred was a storyteller, and he created an wonderfully encompassing story for the Christmas tree business, and it's a marketing thing. And if you believed it, you made a mistake. Yeah. Go ahead.
So go ahead.
I think that part of the other issue was we want to do our due diligence, and so we just wanted to look at it.
Right.
And honestly, if we had probably looked at it, and seeing it now from the outside, that we can see even more. We probably would have said okay, and nobody else, and there wouldn't have been that big meeting.
Yeah,
but that we were just trying to do our due diligence.
I
think
that you're correct, and I think I sensed that. At the same time, your subject matter jurisdiction is external architectural features visible from a road, and it seemed to me that, given some of the flack with the care people taking photographs of the barn I'm not tearing down and telling the world I'm tearing it down.
Oh, yeah,
didn't
no.
do much to build
no,
my goodwill.
Yeah.
And it's a tempest and a teapot, and it was a trial balloon in a way. I mean, I love the barns. Obviously, I worked in those barns. We had Dewey's heifers in those barns. My brother rode his unicycle down, and I ran after him. And then he rode his unicycle back, and we cleaned the crap out behind and fed the cows there. We know those barns very well. Mary Ann showed up in eighth grade. She'd been an Army brat on the road long after we were long down there, and her grandfather worked for my dad and used to drive me around all the time. I'd go with him and listen. One thing I did was listen a lot to old people, because there were a lot of wonderful things to know, and I think that's what motivated me, because of my love for the concept of what they had enjoyed and I had enjoyed. It made me do some very stupid things, like buying all these places and land and trying to secure farming for my brother. Now, if the Carson Lord House closes, which it was supposed to close, yesterday, but deed hadn't been filed at 3 o'clock down at Town Hall, and they were closing at 5. But I assume it will close, they have thrown us off their property, which if you really do an analysis, was a whopping 2 acres of hayfield and 12 acres of swamp. But...
Is that the farm on West Road?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's back on the market. Went back on the market today.
Oh.
They already threw us off. Well, it's growing wood, maybe we can turn the cows back out. We grazed it hard up until the last minute. We had them locked right in there, boy, eat that, eat it.
She canceled Joanne's house, the yellow?
Yeah.
It was canceled yesterday. I assume something went awry.
Maybe I'll end up buying it, but I have resisted buying that place like crazy.
That's another gorgeous house.
She did disclose in agent remarks in the listing that some of the acreage was used for the farm for their cows, and she hoped that it would continue.
The buyers had cows. Was it Scotch Highlanders they were going to bring?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was raised there, and that's where my brother Scotty fell in love with farming, and Carl Dewey was wonderful. He died about 5 years ago.
I've been in that house, yeah.
So that's why the damn thing hasn't closed. I've been running down there every day looking for that deed, thinking...
Well, I just saw that this morning. I saw it was canceled. I'm like, oh, I wonder what happened. And then I was checking new listings, and there it was. It's back on the market.
Yeah, Chris was over this past weekend and asked about if my barn had electricity. So
I don't know.
Chris Lawler?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It has lights on it.
I told him it was fine.
Today's his birthday, by the way. Chris Lawler, yeah.
Ken would like to speak. He's got his hand up.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry again that I was late. I didn't pay attention to the agenda.
I apologize. I should have reiterated it.
You know, this commission is basically the people that are regular members. I'm just a regular member, and my opinion is one of whatever. One vote out of the whole bunch. But we all have kind of like experiences in our lives that we bring to this commission. And my experience is that I was involved with the City of Hartford as a historic architect for the City of Hartford. And I more or less did all the historic properties in Hartford. And there were quite a few of them. And there were also groups that were pro-historic and people that didn't like historic. And what we were bound by was the original nominations of the districts. There were quite a few districts in Hartford. And the building, this is the document that I figure is the original nominations, and it outlines the properties that have historic,
significant
contributing properties. There are other properties that are have become eligible since they're over 60 years old, or 50 years old, and those properties are eligible. And then we, in Hartford anyhow, we had a big book that would indicate that they were eligible or that they were existing and contributing or just existing, and that was how they did it. They basically went over all those properties. So the commission, the law says that the delineation of the historic property area is mapped out with the nomination of the of the district, and then there's a vote that takes place. And if there's over, I forget how many percentage, then it becomes a historic district. And everything is in that district is under the purview of the commission. And then the commission decides whether or not, you know, what applications, whether an application is appropriate or not appropriate. And that's basically what we do. And so if unless a property is contributing on this in this book, then I think we normally would take less of a serious look at it.
That's reasonable. Mm-hmm.
And if it was less than 50 years old, it wouldn't be eligible to be even considered a historic property.
Not here a month, and I guess in hard time that may.
So I mean, that's all I can tell you. That's my opinion, but the other people have a vote that's just as important as mine. And I do take my hat off to you for being such a good citizen and philanthropist, I guess you would say, for the community. In regards to the barn, I was hoping that there would be some kind of an alternate use that would be appropriate that you might think was worthwhile that the neighborhood or community would come up with. And they've had a year or so to do that. And unless they have done that, which I don't think they have.
I can speak on that when you want me to.
You can come back with an application. You could have come back any time because we rejected it without prejudice. And you can make an application, and if there's nothing that the community has done, you know, I would look favorably on your request. As long as your request explained what it is that you're taking down, which property. There's so many barns on that.
I've listed them out.
It's difficult to understand what you were taken down and what you weren't taken
and
down.
And to Sue's point, you know, like that's why
we had a map and we showed them.
I know we had, yeah.
It was a little fast that we were under the gun to have a meeting and we weren't allowed to go on the property. Yeah. And I don't think we understood your application so as well as we should have, but given the timeline that was we were under, yeah. And
I don't think
what
we
had
to
work
else.
With,
I wasn't surprised.
We came up with that decision. But, you know, as I say, I would be, if I don't want to see, I personally don't want to see things falling apart and falling down. I would give your application you know,
I almost think that it's time to have the building inspector out there and declare it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I think it looks like it's going to fall.
I didn't
that
particularly
one, yeah.
come to discuss that specific application because
right.
it's kind of... Scotty wants to try to move young stock down there, and I thought actually, and this sounds pretty romantic, up on the hill, the Humphreys in, say, 1850 or something, had a grain field. And they built a stone wall that's about 6 feet high, and I don't know why it's six
wow.
feet high,
wow.
except they kept putting stones there, and they kept plowing, and the hill kept eroding down, so they added
oh my
more.
God.
But there's, I had thought, one of the things that I thought was charming about New England was to look out on a fall day and see the green grass inside the patchwork quilt in the, mm-hmm. I thought of making a laneway. There is a laneway up the hill. There was. It sort of is, obviously begins in the historic district, and in fact, maybe we've made field out of everything to the extent of the historic district, but I own the farms at the top. I could make a laneway up, I could cut some of those fields out, rehabilitate them. my brother's young stock could go up the hill and you can drive by and look at the cows going up on the farm side hill up there, and they could pasture up top where, frankly, on the farm at 130 East Mountain Road I own, it's rather rocky up there, and it's kind of like Edgerton's pasture or Dan Richardson's pasture behind your house. It's kind of a terrible thing. What started out with junipers and then went to red cedars, and you go up there now and it's a punji steak factory. If you fall down, you end up gored by red cedar and heartwood knots. But anyway, my thought had been of perhaps, and again, it's inordinately expensive to do anything, having made a lot of fields or reclaimed a lot of fields over the last 3-4 decades. But it would be a romantic thing to have a way to get up the hill and have the cows get up the hill and enjoy the thing. And I think it would be beautiful, and it would get him more forage, because if we lose the Carson Lord, whatever, Foster Carson's house, I guess now, which it sounds like the sale fell through, and maybe we'll get the munch the hay down so it doesn't grow up the weeds. Gotta be hopeful. But anyway, it would get us more local forage, and I guess the thought had been that those barns were functionally shot, structurally shot. They were not something that we would use. And as I started to say before you got here, I worked on estate planning and clean outs and worked with a lot of elderly people. My right-hand man at 89 died a week ago or so after being off the job for 3 days or something. He worked until the end.
Oh my God. Wow.
But we know that we can hoard land and we can hoard barns, but ultimately, if it's not going to be used on a farm, it is occupying growing space and it's right next to the farmstead. And in terms of spreading manure, I mean, you're the poor guy who has to walk. You see, it leaks a little bit. Mm-hmm. We like to try to not drive it very far because we don't want to have to. And it seemed to me that that might work out. I'll revisit looking at that. I haven't been in the barns recently. As I said, we got the asbestos out of them. I got all that certified, so if they fell in, we wouldn't have to worry about
it. That's huge.
That had to be a big job.
Yeah, that's huge.
And you spoke of the barns, and I know that Elizabeth Vinnick, who's vice chairman of PNZ now, was there saying, well, you could make the barns into affordable housing and that sort of thing. And
No,
well, it would be housing, and a lot of rehabilitation of industrial buildings goes to things. Those buildings were so structurally shot that it would be a rotting mess, and you wouldn't want to live there yourself, and you certainly wouldn't want anyone else to. But one thought I had is, as I accumulated now, I don't know, where the hell's my chart? Got trouble. I got so much paperwork I can't find anything. No, I think it's in this pile. I said I have 59 properties in Canton now, I think it is. This is a picture of some of the land we have. This is in 2021, a bunch of it's in New Hartford, but you can just see there's a lot of farmland in clumps.
Sorry.
Yeah.
There we go.
The
blue is your property?
What's that?
The blue?
Yeah, that stuff I own, or my brother and I own, that I am the majority owner of. Some LLC I started. There's 56 lots in Canton, 9 lots in New Hartford, plus a big industrial complex I own. 15 are in the Canton Center Historic District.
Okay.
I bought this land with my eyes open and full awareness that if the farming thing fell through, we'd probably have a new generation that decided to be in the housing business or build something. So when the gravel pit in Satan's Kingdom came open and Bears wanted the money to pay for Dad, I bought it, nobody was sure if it was a good gravel pit. I knew it was because my dad told me, and he knew the guys who ran it. And I went and did the research, and damned if my old man's memory wasn't right. It was all approved by zoning, and it started before zoning in Canton. And I calculated I can take about 60 feet off the top of the hill, and I will get a 16-acre plateau that I can put the topsoil back on. And the topsoil, if it's on a thing, is like canvas on a tent. You take the tent pole out and you drop it, you got too much canvas. So we're going to have plenty of topsoil, and we will have a 16-acre mesa there that will allow us to replace the Carson Lord house. It might not happen for decades at the rate the guy's hauling dirt out of there, but that was a thought. Another thought was that I have 1,400,000 cubic yards of sand and gravel, and it's making septic sand for people. So if it is my destiny to be out of the farming business and have to build houses, I thought I could build a house. Now, if we could go through some of my properties, I would start at the south end and just go through them. There's 149 Cherry Brook Road across from the creamery, and then that abuts 167, which is the Goodhue place, has an old garage that the church people built charitably for her. Those comprise about 30 acres. The state dug the gravel out of there to fill in to make 179 the way it is. And I have thought of, well, my initial thought was that I was going to fix the house until I got to the house and pushed on it. And I pushed on it, and it started to go, and it would move about a foot and a half.
Holy cow. Oh, boy.
I talked with a bunch of people, like, well, you could save it, but the studs are gone, and they had piled leaves against it, and it was a mess. So I applied to take it down, and after a year and a half, they never met, and I took it down, and everybody was madder than a wet hen. But anyway, it had, according to Howdy Edgerton, Mr. Goodhue had the best potato patch in town up on the step there behind the house, which is growing pine trees because it is stratified drift soil. And I got Clarence Welty to drill it with geotechnical drilling and tell me what was there. And at the time, Roger Whitney, and they said there were 75,000 cubic yards of sand and gravel there. And I thought, well, I don't really want to mess that up. Someday I might. Mr. Goodhue's harrows were still there and his plows from 1900 or something. And I thought, now we'll probably cut it over and put it into use. Then I got reading about septic systems, and that sand and gravel deposit there could support the septic system for 150 apartments or 200 if you used a modern septic design. That got me thinking, maybe I ought to build a barn like that barn at the Carson Lord's house, which is this giant, beautiful homage to that barn, pop a bunch of windows in it and repopulate Canton Center as a possibility. But I didn't really have any real thought of that. I just thought it was a funny thing that if we had to stop farming and I got a sand and gravel deposit I can mine, I can. My brother's a great engineer. He'd come up with how to make it work. And alternatively, if I dug the sand and gravel out, and I don't know if the historic district has any control over that or not, they might, or maybe they should, it would make it. I looked at it as a ball field because they wanted ball fields, and I also looked at it as an alfalfa field. But I think if we took it down, then it wouldn't work so good for these septic systems. The big thing with high volume septic is to get distance to groundwater. So if you're up 40 feet, the processing of the effluent occurs in the first foot or so in these modern systems, and then it's water, but you can't have it backing up. Mm-hmm. So if bedrock, if your surface is here and bedrock's there, it doesn't work. So that place could either be a housing development or intensive development under 830G, so it would be free of zoning if it wanted to be. It would have to comply with the historic district, so it could be a barn or it could be built in a manner that looked like it had to look. Georgie Wagner's place, when I bought that, is the backside of that gravel deposit. I haven't, one thing everybody says is don't punch into the brook or you got a problem. I don't know that I will ever do anything. Probably I'll croak and she'll end up having a deal with it, and nothing will happen. That's probably the way human nature goes. But you should know that if you needed affordable housing or less expensive or higher density housing, it certainly could go there because the septic system
could
be built.
It. Mm-hmm.
A development in Granby with something like 70 units, the septic system was 38 feet by 99. And they did that with these modern things that give you 36 linear feet per foot. It's stunning how efficient they are. There's all these panels and stuff. I don't know. Nobody really wants high-density housing in Collin.
I was under the impression that the whole district is like single-family zoned.
Yeah, with 830G, you just ignore all local legislation from zoning.
That's the affordable housing?
Yeah.
Well, that's a dogfight that this commission wouldn't be involved in.
No, well,
that's something that the
The planning didn't like it, but I can see both sides of it. Having been on the, was former vice chairman, been on it for many years. I don't advocate for it or not. Now another property coming north from there. That's that property. I own 9 East Mountain, which is a fairly large lot, and I have the right to use the front lot. The Kent Land Trust was given by Charlotte Craig. It's her septic system drain field. And it was a nice thing to give because then you don't have to pay for as much land in town, and they mow your septic system so it doesn't get trees in it, you see. If you're a trust fund girl, you find these things out. Now, that place could tolerate another house on it in accordance with zoning law. I don't know if I want to do that. But if I did, I would probably build a duplex house. And I might want to put in a duplex on at 4 East Mountain Road, which is, next to the corner house. And I got involved with modular housing and manufactured housing. And manufactured housing is better from a cost angle because it's immune to local zoning codes and the local building codes. HUD has priority. I guess none of those are the one. But this is a house down in a mobile home park community. You could call it a mobile home community because they don't like the word park. This used to be Jensen's down in, these are all different pictures of the same thing. But you can, that's made by Champion Homes out of Pennsylvania, and they can make that double wide as 2 units with the entries on each end. So it is a duplex, and it costs $104,000 for that thing to be brought up and put on a pad.
How much? I missed that.
$104,000 is all. You have to cast a pad 4 inches thick by 6 inches more on a side than the size of it. And that might be something that would be useful to provide housing for somebody in a pinch. And if it were, see, they can make it with a half porch on this end and then a half porch on the other end so that it allows it to...
Separate entrances.
Yeah, it allows the privacy of having your own porch, and if somebody starts smoking or doing dope or something, he's not in your face so much. My daughter wants her own house. I let her live in a house I own 5/6 of at the end of the field, but like most kids, she wants to own it outright. I may build her a house up on top of East Mountain. I have a lot there at 122 East Mountain, which is by the power line. And I don't know that I'll ever do anything, but I was impressed going in these things. They're very nice.
I'm not scrolling through my phone, believe me. I'm trying to find, there's a really amazing modular, it's not modular, it's...
These are coming in with wheels on them, and they just jack
right,
them
they
up.
Just jack, and
but
then
they are wonderful. I was quite surprised.
This is one up in from Maine. I was actually, my son is in construction, and I was trying to encourage him to look at this place, and it's called Wright something. So I just wanted to see if I could find it. Wright Built Homes.
They do not. They, remember that, Leslie.
They don't look at all like modulars. They're beautiful.
I was captured by the modular that comes in as, yeah, that's multi-story. The problem is those darn things are,
yeah,
how much a foot now?
Well,
they're over $200-something a foot as a modular.
It's a modular home in my neighborhood.
It's terribly expensive. I mean, that
looks
house
like
that,
yeah, I mean, they come in, they have all different ones, yeah, but they're just so...
I kind of feel like it would be nice to have something with more stories so that you didn't waste land.
Land,
being
right.
Somebody who loves land, but
yeah.
I also know that there's a territorial imperative. It's nice to have your little lawnmower and your little
right
place you park your car and nobody bugs you.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's kind of sweet.
Especially yeah in a location like that.
So I don't know that I'll ever do anything, but these sorts of houses probably do not comply with what would be expected of a hysterical house, and yet from the perspective of having a roof apex and an angle, that thing's pretty good. When you compare it to that one, it doesn't look a whole lot different. Maybe it's a little flatter. When you look at the roof angle, look at the roof angle.
This is quite different than that.
Well, the structure is, but the roof included angle.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah
is actually maybe a steeper roof.
This has a lot more detail on it and,
yeah,
and a lot more character than that.
Yeah.
I would agree.
And although you might not say, think it fits into the neighborhood, it kind of does.
It's a beautiful
and it's
yeah
looks reminds me of a one of those old Craftsman type houses.
Yeah,
Craftsman
yeah
style
mm-hmm
house.
And
especially the stone
and doors. That's the kind of thing that I think that the commission although we don't have a historic property on these lands that are in our district, we do have purview over what is built there,
yeah,
because we have what we have to give a certificate of
appropriateness. Yeah,
appropriateness. So that, unfortunately, and I understand and I sympathize with the lack of desire to deal with commissions and very, although you're on a commission.
But I'm a professional. I deal with bureaucrats all day at work.
It seems to me a lot of independence in your character. And unfortunately,
so your judgment
this
you
is
don't like that
of,
style as much as the other one.
Yeah, yeah, and
yeah,
that's my opinion. But I, as I say, this is a group, and I defer to those people in this community who have been here and have an understanding of what the community wants and what the community's attitude is, and that would be you too. I mean, you have a great deal of understanding.
I've got a lifetime here, and I don't know how long anybody else.
And I don't. I don't think I do. But I do feel that we do have a certain amount of.
We have
absolute
discretion. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Not really.
You can, I think. As a matter of fact, you almost can.
But we don't choose to.
But they don't, because you're trying to be kind.
Yeah.
But I think what hit me, having been a child where my mother took in the beaten people, they didn't have houses for them. Women with children. Mm-hmm. Husbands that got beat up. I had to deal with those people, and some were unseemly. Mostly they were people that were pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I think that I feel an awareness and an obligation. I recognize I cannot obligate anyone else to want to support that to the extent that I have 1,200 acres in Canton and 350 acres in New Hartford, and I could not give another 750 acres to the damn land trust, and I could provide some housing for people who are needy. Mm-hmm. Who the hell am I to tell them they can't have a place to live? I mean, when you think about it, it is a hoarding that is gone on, and I think the land trust movement will have its comeuppance when people finally get sick of it. It happened with Henry VIII, with the church in England, where the Catholics owned all of England, or with down in Juarez in Mexico, where if you were going to get sent to heaven, you had to give your massive ranch to the church, and finally the church owned 3/4 of the damn country, and he just said, I hereby throw you off the land, we are redistributing. And to an extent, you could argue in South Africa, they're trying to redistribute land to African people rather than to the Afrikaners who showed up and nobody likes it. But I can empathize with that feeling, and I'm not sure where it comes down. It has to be tasteful enough that it's tolerable, and yet it has to be affordable for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there has to be some tolerance for difference. Mm-hmm. And again, if we went with stick built, we could build a damn barn that looked like a barn with windows, or we could build an oversized house that looks like the, what is it, Elijah Barber house, or is that your house? You build a big one like that, stuff a bunch of people in it, or build 9 of them with 4 feet in between them or something, because we can deviate the zoning laws. You can't break the building code. One virtue of HUD-approved manufactured housing is that it's exempt from local building code, I believe, so that they can't nickel and dime you and kill you with it, and it's what makes it more affordable. Anyway, I'm done. I think we've pretty much covered it. I could go up the rest of the property.
I think you need to write a book.
I do.
I'll be dead before I do, because I'll be working to pay for all this damn land and subsidize
the farming. Such historical knowledge.
Yeah, no, it would be amazing. Well, you know some good architects.
The thing about it is, I'm retired.
Me too, but...
I guess my feeling has been that I don't know what to do, but it troubles me that maybe we should try to do something, you know?
Yeah.
It just, it's got to bother you.
We
have ours, and probably on zoning, I get 99% of the people who come in go, I want my house, to keep anybody else the hell out of our town and be what they'd want.
I don't really think that's
ethical after a while.
I think a lot of the objection that people have, Canton residents, are the apartments. You know, like the brick apartments going between CVS and the church, the four-story brick. Mm. I think your family, something like that, would be much more, people would be more receptive to something like that versus...
That area down there is... zoned to be
it's totally different animal,
developed.
I agree.
Right. It's quite
but
different.
I mean, when people talk about they don't want people moving in, I'm just speaking generally about the town. I'm not talking about the historic district.
Yeah. I'm right there with them. I was reared on any developer ought to be. We ought to buy the land so the SOB can't develop it. I spent my life doing it. I'm not said, just buy what touches ours. Finally, it's...
You've got a lot of touch.
Well, we could buy in New Hartford because we're almost there.
Pretty close.
Anyway, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we do really appreciate your...
thanks for your kind words.
Time.
You guys can keep that. It's the same one I think I sent you.
Yes, it is. I have that. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to close the meeting. Do I have a motion to...
Are we
going to
vote on the last minutes? It's on the agenda.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot. Okay. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing and...
Thanks again.
Have a nice evening.
Open the meeting. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. And I do have... Okay. So, yes, on the agenda is...
Have your people...
Are we being recorded still?
Oh, our alternates. Yes, I will have our alternates just assign you to be members.
To vote.
Sorry.
I feel special.
I am still recording, yes, good. Okay, thank you for reminding us. I totally spaced, I was late.
It's okay.
And actually, I did want to just, I do have a little change to the draft minutes. It should say in the second paragraph where it says 120 West Street review of application for garage addition, two lines down, it says Mulligans that will be on new garage. It should be Mullen or Munton, sorry. Mullions.
Mullions.
Oh my God, Mullions.
How do you spell that?
Mullions.
Who the hell put Mulligan?
Somebody was golfing that day.
Somebody who didn't sign. Who didn't respectfully submit.
Respectfully submit a fight. Linda.
I didn't say that. We have, I didn't want to own up to it, to tell you the truth.
We should add that up too, but I'll do that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It was thank my you. First go round.
It was your first time, and thank you very much.
No worries.
I much appreciate it. So. Are there any other additions or modifications to the minutes of the April 29th meeting? If barring none, can I have a motion to accept?
I make a motion to accept the minutes.
Okay, a second?
Oh, I can vote. I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor?
You're a voter, girl.
I am.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. I'm abstaining.
Okay.
I wasn't there.
You weren't here. Okay, all right. Very good. The motion passes with one abstention.
Okay.
All right.
I think that was it.
Yes. Okay.
I make a motion. We adjourn.
Could I have a second to adjourn? Yes, I'm seconding it. Okay, we are adjourned.